on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Happy Friday, everybody. The first Friday of 2020. You made it. It was a short week, and you were probably on break. School break, holiday break, break from work. But you know what? We can celebrate small steps, and hopefully you've still kept your New Year's resolution. Jasmine, how are you doing on your resolutions?
I failed last night.
You already failed?
Miserably.
Oh, I shouldn't. That sounded judgmental. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it to
sound
that way.
No, it's not in the bad way. I was trying to eat cleaner, and yesterday I went to Wingstop. So,
what kind of wings did you get?
Lemon pepper.
Oh, I love those.
Amazing.
I love the lemon pepper. It's so good.
So, yeah, I already messed. I'm going to start again. I started well today, don't you think? I had water and more water and more water.
Well, you know, yesterday we had a lot of people calling us and then texting us because we were talking about words that should be banned.
Oh, yeah,
There was a university in Michigan that was banning words for 2020. And a lot of people, thank you so much for calling in and texting as well. By the way, this is the Anna DeVellante show, and Anna is taking the day off, and she's been enjoying time with family and friends, and I'm G Suk Yi, otherwise just known as G, filling in, and really appreciated you guys calling in and texting yesterday, and I just wanted to mention that because I saw another article about one word you should never use in a conversation. And Jasmine, I'm wondering if you know what this word is.
It's like?
No, it's not like. I know a lot of people think that, but they say that the one word that you shouldn't use, and just piggybacking on our conversation yesterday, is the word just.
What?
Yes. So as in, for example, I just wanted to check in on you, or I just wanted to say that I'm sorry.
That's so weird. I feel like that's normal.
But they're saying that basically it's a qualifier, and adding just is fine if there's a specific reason you want your email to sound sorry.
Right.
But if you're asking the recipient to complete a project, let's say you're trying to talk to a coworker and they haven't responded to you, often people say, I just wanted to check in. I just wanted to see where you were.
I think that has to do with the annoyance level. Like, just checking in to see. Like, if you say that five times, then you're annoying. But if you just say it one time, I really don't feel like that's a bad thing, because you're literally just, sorry, checking in.
So, in a LinkedIn blog post, Google's former head of global marketing communications, Ellen Lentz, explains that the word just frequently functions as a subtle message of subordination or deference, thus giving the recipient more control over the conversation, and it weakens your message that you're trying to send.
So what is the I guess the counter word for that?
You don't even need it.
That's right. That's what Lauren Lapka is saying. She never uses the word just in her conversations.
I don't know if that's true, but now I'm going to be very aware of it.
I am too. But this is, you know, it's from Google, the head of global marketing. That's a pretty big deal, writing it for LinkedIn. And I guess they are applying it more to the workplace setting. But I just wanted to add that. So in case now there's a word that maybe you don't want banned, but you should probably think twice before using.
That's so true. I do use it more in an email than anything, I think.
Yes. So I think
it is like a subordination thing. Oh, I got to get my tail out from between my legs.
I know. All of us do. And then something that is trending that I'm going to be talking about later, and if you want to text me and call me on, 15 things you should do at least once a year. This is an article on mental floss. And of course, off the top of my head, one thing we do once a year is we file for taxes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
There's the deep house cleaning that happens. But one of the surprising things is the article says you should trash all your beauty supplies.
You should. You if you don't, if it's like eyeshadows, you're okay. It just depends. But you should trash it like once every 6 months. You should go through.
I didn't realize this. Apparently, bacteria can collect, and a lot of beauty supplies don't last longer than a year. So text me at 312-981-7200 or call me. Let me know what's one thing that you should do at least once a year. I've got a great show lined up for you today. Thanks to our producer, Jasmine, who is the full-time producer for the Anna DeVellante Show, and including Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got some legal talk with attorney Rich Lenkoff. He's going to be talking about some trending legal stories, including a kid in Texas who got off on serving any time for a crime because he suffered from being affluent. So he suffered from being too rich and having too many things handed to him and having a golden spoon. That's what it's called, right?
Yeah, the phrase includes golden spoon. I just can't think of what it
is. Yeah, I'm like, what is it? How's it go?
Born with a golden spoon maybe, in your mouth, maybe. Something like that.
So that was his legal defense. So attorney Richard Lenkoff is going to be talking about that. We're also going to have a relationship expert, Love McPherson. Love McPherson, that's a great name. I wonder if Love is truly her legal given first name. But yeah, she'll be in studio talking about relationships, how to give them a fresh start, how to get out of a toxic relationship. I feel like we all know someone that's in a toxic relationship. It could be ourselves. I've been in some toxic relationships. I am willing to admit it. And also, we're going to be talking about movies to see this weekend. And then we're going to be talking about beer trends for 2020 as well. So a little bit of libations for your Friday. But right now, in studio with me is Hugh Galdones. He is a photographer and a very well-known foodie about town. I know people don't really like that term, foodie, but Hugh, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So tell us what you do. You're a photographer, but what I think is amazing about you is you're kind of a famous, I want to say influencer. That was a word that people wanted thrown out, by the way.
Same here, actually.
Yeah, but they don't like the word influencer, but
I'm a food photographer. So I photograph things, make them look delicious, photograph chefs, make them look awesome, you know.
How did you make this transition into food photography?
I was always a lover of food, worked in kitchens for the longest time, and loved photography, and found a way to mix everything that I love into my career.
So when did you transition? Because you weren't doing photography or even full-time food before.
Yeah, no, that's right. I started full-time back in 2010 or so in Chicago, but was always doing it part-time, would shoot for the school newspaper, would shoot for blogs and whoever would hire me.
Well, yeah. Just because I know there's so many people listening that feel as though they have a hobby that they really love. And you turned this hobby into a craft, it's art, now job. You've turned it into a viable business. People seek you from all over the world to work with them, whether it's for their cookbook or to photograph the food for social media or for websites.
Yeah, I'm lucky to be where I am now. But yeah, this wasn't my day job 10 years ago.
What was your day job?
I have a PhD in pharmacology and therapeutics, and I was a postdoc at Northwestern in OBGYN. So just down the road from here.
Oh, wow. So what did the parents say when you said, I want to give this all up and become a photographer?
It took them a while to forgive me.
And I want to photograph food.
Yeah, it took them a while. I had to actually bring them on set to a shoot in Napa to show them exactly what I was doing and make them realize, hey, this is actually a real job.
You know, we were also talking about pet peeves yesterday, and I know a lot of people find the food photographs on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Some consider that a pet peeve of theirs to see all the food. But you do that, and it's beyond that, of course.
Yeah, I like to think so. Yeah.
Yes, obviously. But you also have tips for how people can take better photos.
Oh, totally. There's so many ways to improve one's skill.
Okay, so we're going to come back with that. Also, the secret of how Hugh was able to start this business. And we're going to describe more of what he does. He has an incredible studio as well. So a lot to talk about with Hugh Galdones, who's a photographer and incredible foodie. When we come back, a lot more here on WGN Radio. We're back on the Anna DeVellante Show. This is G, and I am joined by photographer Hugh Galdones, who just told us an interesting story about how he was... What were you doing at Northwestern?
I was a postdoctoral fellow. So it's what you do after you get a PhD. You do research for...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, PI.
So what happened that you had a light bulb moment, lightning struck you, and you said, I am changing the course of my life. I'm going to devote myself full time to photography.
Well, you know, it was always a slow progression. And it was actually a couple of things. You know, my contract was ending. Funding was low. I realized I wasn't necessarily the best at what I did in the lab in research. And I always loved photography. And a client came up to me and said, hey, we want to hire you full time as a photographer for a traveling food tour. And that's when it was like, okay, let me ask my wife and let's risk it. And that was back in 2010.
So when your wife married you, you were this postdoctoral fellow.
Yeah, I was.
And then you became a photographer. Of course, you're very successful now. But when you told her this, what did she say?
No, she was very supportive. She didn't realize she was marrying a starving artist. But it all worked out in the end, as far as I'm aware.
So if someone's listening who is thinking, wow, you know, what I'm doing right now isn't my calling, and I feel as though... You know, I feel this inner voice pulling at me to try something else and maybe focus full time on the thing that I truly love. What piece of advice would you give them?
If you have the means to step away from your current gig and to risk it all, just be patient, because it took me a while to sort of get on my feet. But luckily, with the support that I had, my wife, my friends, my colleagues, it was I wouldn't say smooth, but it was a fruitful transition.
So I do a lot of coverage for the Chicago Sun-Times on the food world, on restaurants. And my previous gig over at ABC's Windy City Live, I covered food a lot for several years. So that's how we initially met. Mm-hmm. Can you describe to the listener what your photography and what your job entails in case they're just not picturing the full scope of everything that you do?
Yeah, I think my business is split up into three sort of facets. The first facet is... You know, food porn. You know, you have all these restaurants in the city and in the country and in the world who want to showcase their food, and they call me to showcase their food. Another aspect is actually the commercial side of things. So when you go to a grocery store and you buy a frozen pizza and there's a picture of the pizza on the box, that's the stuff that we do as well. That's the commercial side. And then the other facet is actually food events. So, you know, the food culture is such a prominent part of today's, you know, just pop culture. And we go to Food and Wine Classic in Aspen, we go to the Bon Appetit, Chicago Gourmet, and we document all those things and tell the story behind our lens.
Huge kudos to you for even recognizing that there was a need in the market.
I don't really know if I recognize the need. I was just trying to follow my dream and follow my passion, and it just all worked out at the end.
And then opportunities started revealing themselves to you.
Sure. I think the big thing really was just fostering relationships with these chefs and with these restaurant groups. You know, if you want to work with people that you love, you want to work with people who are nice, who understand what you do and value what you do.
So tell us about some of the dreamy assignments that you've had.
Just late last year or early last year, we went to Peru with Stephanie Izard before she opened Cabra.
Who is the initially came to national fame with Top Chef, winning Top Chef, and then, of course, locally here, she has several incredible restaurants, including Girl and the Goat. Yeah.
She's also Iron Chef as well.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, so she has several restaurants, and so before opening Cabra, we went to Peru. Before she opened Duck Duck Goat, we went to China. Before she opened Little Goat, we went to Colombia. So those are, you know, those are the dream jobs where you sort of, you're a fly on the wall following a chef as they seek inspiration and seek deliciousness in a different country.
So she's paying you to come on a trip with her, and you're tasting delicious food and taking photographs.
Yeah, in a nutshell.
And so then you work with her on the cookbook.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we shot a cookbook a couple years ago, Gathering Grace. Yeah. And
did you ever imagine that would be how this adventure turned out for you?
Absolutely not. And what's funny about that quote-unquote relationship with Steph is I met her shooting for New York Magazine back in the day when they were still there. And she opened Girl and the Goat, and I was there on opening day. And I ended up seeing her other events, and she thought I was stalking her. But ultimately, we became good friends and been working together ever since.
Describe a food event, maybe a fabulous one that you've been to recently that you've covered.
You know, the Super Bowl of food events, in my opinion, is the Food and Wine Classic in Aspen. It's the who's who. It's some of the best food, some of the best talent, some of the best sponsors.
So it's kind of like a food festival slash convention that happens.
Yeah, basically. So it's a convention for the chefs.
How many days?
About 3 or 4 days.
Are there just regular folks there too?
Yeah, there's the consumers. But I mean, regular Aspen consumers. You know, Aspen consumer is very different than a Chicago consumer. But yeah, it's consumer driven as well.
What are the differences? Are you allowed to say?
I'd rather not.
You mean Chicago's better? The Chicago consumer. We're more laid back.
More
down
laid
to
back.
Earth.
They understand food more.
What do you think about the Chicago food scene? I know that initially, originally, you're from Montreal.
Born and raised in Canada. Proud of that. Mm-hmm. Chicago, best food city in the country, in my opinion. That's kind of one of the reasons why I'm still here. It's just such a great market for what I do. And I love to eat. And this is a place to eat.
You have a studio as well that you just opened up.
Yeah, about 2 years ago, just by the United Center. It's 4,000 square feet of goodness. We partnered up with a couple of artists and create this space where we can shoot cookbooks, shoot magazine covers, shoot commercial stuff, shoot portraits, whatever we need to do.
See, I would have never thought about this. I know for me, you go into the grocery store, you're in the frozen aisle, you're picking up that pizza. The pizza looks so delicious on the box. Hopefully the pizza looks like that when you pull it out of the oven. But you're the one that's making me buy that pizza because of that great photograph.
The magic of packaging.
So you only work with chefs and food photos?
96.5% of the time, it's all food and hospitality related. Okay. So food, beverage, hotels, restaurants. The other couple percent would be hopefully golf down the line.
I see. I like where you're going. You're just steering this towards the things that you love.
Exactly.
What are some of the pet peeves that you have with the photographs that you see online, on social media? And what are some tips that you can give folks? Because everybody's just taking pictures with their phones now because the cameras on our phones are so incredible.
They are incredible. I mean, the big red flags for me are when people use their flash. That's number one.
What if it's dark and we just don't have enough light?
But are you there to eat or are you there to take pictures of the food? That's the other thing.
Okay, so you're opposed to all of this so you're agreeing with a lot of the listeners that text in that say, oh my goodness, I'm sick and tired of seeing just food photos on
I'm not sick and tired of seeing food photos. I'm sick and tired of seeing
bad ones,
poor ones. Yeah.
Okay.
The flash is a big one. I see a lot of shots overhead. You know, people are shooting overhead. It's easy with the iPhone or with any mobile device.
Okay. So you mean kind of this
a bird's eye view.
Gotcha.
I get it. You know, it's easy to do and you can get a lot in frame.
But why are you saying maybe think about something else instead of doing that?
Because do you ever eat your food looking over it like you're shooting it?
I never thought about that.
You know, like my style is I like to shoot it as if I'm sitting down and how the consumer would see it. That's sort of my ethos in a way. I shoot stuff overhead as well, but I like to shoot things, we call it 3/4, where you just as if the viewer's looking at it.
And it doesn't have to be centered. How do you, in terms of layout?
Yeah, composition is the big one. I think in terms of giving people advice, it's really figuring out how to place whatever they want to shoot in frame properly. And getting rid of the stuff you don't want in frame.
I know that you've given classes and courses here and there. Is that something that you're doing regularly through the studio or?
We've done a couple in the studio, some through the Apple Store and some through third parties, but nothing regular. Hopefully to do more of it. Those are really fun to do.
What about photos of people? What are people doing wrong when they're taking a snapshot of, you know, a portrait of someone?
With their phone?
Yes.
Sometimes it's just blurry. You know, that's a big one, you know, and those are things that not everyone would see, but, you know, just take the time to get a nice, clean, sharp image.
This is my pet peeve with my mother, whom I love so much, and I gifted her with an iPhone, and she still, to this day, every photo that she takes is blurry, and she does this thing where she moves her hand before the photo has completely taken and captured. So then it's not only blurry, but there's a little bit of a movement in it as well.
Yeah. My mom, too. And she shoots stuff on a tablet, so it's even worse because the camera's not as good. And everything's always blurry. Sorry, Mom.
Just make sure that it's not blurry. What about distance? How close should people be? Should you zoom in?
You know, every person's different. Every shot's different. Those are things I can't really teach anyone. It really...
Okay.
Every scenario is different.
So you recommend that everybody explores and has their own style?
Oh, yeah, no, totally. But I mean, it's always more pleasant to see a sharp, well-lit image than to see an image that's blurry and not well composed.
I think I should start a new trend. Jasmine, you tell me what you think about this. I'm just going to start taking photos of my food after I've already demolished it, after it's completely eaten.
I like that.
What do you think, Huge?
Oh, I do it myself.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. Been there, done that.
So, okay. Never mind. Huge has already thought about it. Okay. So let's talk about food. I know you're a big foodie. What are some of your favorite spots? Anything new that's opened up?
Oh, it put me on the spot here.
I know. I'm sorry.
I love Boca. It's like a mainstay.
Mm-hmm.
Love Elska, another mainstay.
Okay.
And Duck Duck Goat, just for their noodles. Some of the best noodles I've ever had.
They do have good noodles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do love Boca. I think it's a very romantic restaurant.
But it doesn't always have to be. You can just go there for a bite and a drink at the bar, or you can go for a special occasion.
And that's also a way that you don't necessarily have to splurge. It can be affordable. Just go sit at the bar and have one appetizer and a drink or something.
Exactly. Same thing with Elska. You know, you can have the tasting menu, but you can also go to the bar and get a little bite and a drink.
You know what? I don't frequent Elska enough. I always want to.
Okay.
Yeah. So
highly recommend.
You know. What's your favorite food craving, late night food craving?
Oh, Jet's Pizza.
So the
not
pan.
Classy, but delicious.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, give us your website and let us know where we can find you in case we want to get in touch with you and also see your work.
Yeah. So my website's galdones.com, galdones.com. And you can find me on Instagram at galdophoto.com or at galdophoto, rather.
Okay, yeah. Everybody stop with a bird's eye photo of your plate. Huge doesn't approve. Okay, thanks so much for being with us, Huge, and Happy New Year.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Right now, it is time to check in with the WGN newsroom. This is the Anna DeVlanta Show. Anna's off today. I'm G, filling in. And joining us, I have to say Happy New Year to attorney Rich Lenkoff. Happy 2020.
Happy New Year. 2020, the Barbara Walters year, right?
I know. Did you see the meme everywhere? This is 2020.
2020. You gotta do the Bala Wawa accent, right?
Oh, well, that's a pretty good one. See, I knew I couldn't even do it. So I know that, you know, people have been talking about the top this and the top that that happened in 2019, and we're already on day three now.
Yes.
But we haven't seen you. And so we're going to do a little bit of a review in terms of legal stories, the top 10 legal stories from 2020.
Yeah,
shall we?
The last and only legal, top 10 story you might need for 2019. But yeah, our crack staff here at Legal Face Off on WGN put together what we thought were the top legal stories of the year.
And I should mention, you're the host of Legal Face Off on WGN Plus.
Yeah, this is our sixth year doing it here at WGN, and my co-host Tina Martini is one of our hosts, and it's been a great run here at WGN, so we're very happy. We'll be taping our next show on Tuesday.
Cool.
Here, so yeah, we put together a list, and we put it in order, actually. So starting off with El Chapo trial, of course, was a huge legal story we covered this year. El Chapo, of course, the leader of the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico, been the subject of the government and, you know, lots of trials for years, of course, famously escaped from a couple jails in Mexico. Well, they finally nabbed him, and he was convicted in a Miami federal courtroom earlier this year and is now serving time in jail. Continues, though, to haunt authorities because there was famously a few weeks ago, there was a attempt to capture his son, one of his sons, and the other son staged this elaborate escape where the government was foiled. So his son is now back on the loose. But yeah, that was a huge story this year. That was our number 10 story. Number 9 story, and, you know, locally, we started off as a local story, but then, of course, exploded nationally, is the Jussie Smollett story, Star of Empire. Started off early in the year. We all heard the initial allegation that Jussie Smollett was the victim of a hate crime here in downtown Chicago. And shortly thereafter, the whole story unraveled, of course, when we learned that the alleged, the two brothers, now famous brothers, who were allegedly involved, were paid, in fact, by the actor to stage this attack. And, of course, Jussie Smollett was arrested and then, you know, famously let go, by state's attorney Kim Fox, that now is haunting her reelection campaign. One of her commercials now has said that she handled that poorly. She admits that she mishandled that whole situation. Jussie Smollett is now still in the news. There's a pending lawsuit trying to get the
recoup the money.
Yeah, the city of Chicago is trying to recoup the money from him. So story continues, and you know, in our opinion, a big black eye on the city, and not a great look for Chicago.
That story took so many turns. It was the news story that just kept on giving.
Absolutely, and you know, lots of content for a legal podcast. So you know, we like these stories on our show, so we're appreciative of them. The next story, number 8 on our list, is the Jeffrey Epstein saga. Of course, Jeffrey Epstein was convicted or was actually in jail waiting for his trial for alleged violations of several laws, you know, sexual harassment, involvement with underage girls.
Abuse.
Lots of abuse. And he allegedly killed himself in prison. Of course, that led to a lot of speculation about whether he, in fact...
Conspiracy theories.
Lots of conspiracy theories about whether he, in fact, killed himself, whether he was killed. There was some evidence of negligence, in fact, by the jailers. So that was a big legal story. Continues to be a story because, you know, he was a friend of Trump. And, of course, Trump has distanced himself, even though there's lots of pictures over the years of him and Trump. So
also fallout with the Prince Andrew.
Absolutely. Continues to be a story with Prince Andrew.
And then also the guards are now being...
Yeah, absolutely. The guards are in trouble. They were fired for allegedly sleeping on the job.
Right.
So, yeah, lots of...
Convoluted stories.
Lots of stories involving Jeffrey Epstein. Number 7 on our list is one of, I think, 3 Trump stories. You can't have a list of top legal stories of 2019 without mentioning our president. Of course, this one involves the subpoena in New York for Trump's income taxes. There's a lawsuit in federal court in New York. Trump is facing a suit to try to look into alleged tampering around the elections, payments to Stormy Daniels. Part of that case that the feds are bringing in New York is trying to get his taxes. Of course, Trump has forever said he won't release his taxes, lost at 2 levels, and now has appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States to determine whether his allegation of privilege over his taxes is valid. I think he's going to lose, but that's a huge legal story that we're going to look at continuing in 2020. Number 6 on our story, again, local celebrity, but national, international news, is R. Kelly. I think last night, Lifetime showed the part 2 of the documentary, Surviving R. Kelly. We've had his attorney on our podcast a couple of times. And, you know, R. Kelly stands to spend the rest of his life in jail if convicted of these various allegations involving underage girls, imprisonment, all sorts of stuff. So
the documentary was really, you know, in terms of it was opinion altering for so many people that had supported R. Kelly for so long. So many of his fans, once they saw that documentary, that's really what changed their minds.
Yeah, I mean, R. Kelly was acquitted, remember, of these charges many years ago, and the story laid mostly dormant until the documentary came out. And of course, this was in the middle of the Me Too movement, so got a lot of steam there. And I think it's a good development, obviously, that these allegations are now coming to light and justice, you know, hopefully will be served. Halfway there, our next story.
We on number 5?
We're on number 5, and this is also a Trump story. I think a huge legal story this year that we cover, that, you know, most people covered, was the conviction of many of Trump's aides. Everyone from his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, to Paul Manafort, to Roger Stone, all now serving time in jail. The number 4 story, huge locally, but also nationally, is the legalization of marijuana.
We've been talking about it all week.
Nonstop. I think the city reported that they had $3.2 million in sales after one day. So, huge story.
And everybody's trying to figure out, how do I get on that train?
How do I get in?
Of course, it's too late to get a license.
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, yeah, Illinois is now one of 11 states that have legalized recreational marijuana. Number 3 is the college cheating scandal that involved many celebrities. Lori Loughlin is still that her. She says she's going to trial on hers. You know, the others played out, but Lori Loughlin, who of course is the star of Full House, Fuller House, she's holding out. They've offered her a deal, but she is apparently going to trial, and we'll see. I mean, the federal government, as you know, doesn't go to trial unless they feel they could win. They usually have a pretty high winning percentage, so it looks like she will, and her husband will probably be serving time if they're convicted.
There seemed to be a lot of discussion, too, between her and the other famous Hollywood actress who served her time, Felicity Huffman, about the differences in terms of how they were approaching dealing with the deal.
Yeah, and Felicity Huffman took the deal, you know, had a pretty pretty good stay in her prison by all accounts. It wasn't too arduous and got out pretty quickly and is now on with her life. So, yeah, two different ways of approaching it from a defendant perspective. Second biggest legal story of 2019 is, of course, the Mueller probe and its the release of its report, followed by Mueller's now famous, infamous appearance before Congress. Didn't do a great job by most accounts and did not lead to anything, really, if you believe, you know, many accounts. Finally, what do we, can you guess what the top legal story is of 2019?
One?
We're at number one already.
Is it it's involving Me Too, Ronan Farrow?
Close.
No?
That's a good one. That didn't make the list. Number one story is, of course, the impeachment of the president.
Okay.
That happened, we all know. Of course, that does not mean that Trump has been convicted. I think what we, you know, one of the great effects of this whole process has been that we have learned much more about what impeachment involves. So even though Trump's been impeached, he will undergo a trial probably in January by the full Senate. And if convicted, then he might, you know, step down. But of course, there's now allegations that there won't be a trial because the articles haven't been presented to the Senate. So that's our top 10 list. So you have 2019.
That's a great top 10 list. This is attorney Rich Lenkoff and host of Legal Face Off, which is on WGN Plus. We're going to have a lot more with you when we come back from break, but we're going to be talking about trending legal stories, which
yes,
are going to be very
fun. Yes, current stories right now.
Absolutely. So a lot more coming up here on WGN Radio. G here for the Anna DeVellante Show. I asked earlier one word you should never use in a conversation. The article said that the word just is the word that you shouldn't use, especially in email, especially when it's to a coworker. I had a lot of texts. 773 basically is junk too. 773 also says literally is bad. 847, word to not use is thing. It means nothing and everything at the same time. And 773 says, you know, that's filler, is junk. And I was teasing this story that was coming up about the affluent kid that got off, didn't serve any time for his crime that you're going to be talking about. And I said, golden spoon. What I was trying to think of was silver spoon. Thank you, 708, silver spoon. It was a moment. Lauren Lapping and I both couldn't think of it.
Failure by our part.
Because you tried to come to my rescue, but I think at that point I put golden into your mind. And
you did.
Why.
No, but I'm sorry.
It's my bad.
Still, so
my
I think,
fault.
You know what? We have a lot on our minds every day.
Platinum,
I think we're okay.
Platinum spoon. How about that? 14 karat gold. Okay. No, it's correct. Silver spoon. Thank you so much, 708. Okay, back here with attorney Rich Lenkoff. Hey, by the way, I'm curious with your law firm. You are a partner at Bryce Downey and Lenkoff. How are you guys going to deal with legal marijuana?
We've
been thinking about that and maybe putting a dispensary in our lobby, in our break room, you know, now that it's legal. But, yeah, actually, it's a great question because employers can still make using marijuana or any drug illegal in the workplace. So there's that conflict. But, yeah, I think a lot of employers are dealing with that now and how to deal with employees who might show up stoned, right? I mean, that's going to be a thing, to use a word that you now have banned from our lexicon. But yeah, but according to the law, employers can still make their workplaces drug free.
Well, Rich, I appreciate how you avoided my question about your own firm's company policy, but we'll continue. So let's talk about current trending topics.
Yes.
By the way, I loved your top 10 list.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm glad we got that in, even though it's day three. Don't
absolutely.
Be mad at us, everybody. We haven't seen Rich. He just got in here.
Absolutely. We are covering some legal stories. We always cover a grab bag of breaking legal stories in our show, Legal Face-Off. We'll be taping early next week here at WGN. So some stories that we are covering that are really interesting is the Carlos Ghosn case. He escaped from custody in Japan.
This is the former Nissan CEO.
Absolutely. One of the, you know, at one point was one of the top four or five leaders of the auto industry in the world, one of the most prominent CEOs in the country, probably in the world, given that Nissan, you know, is a multinational corporation. Well, he has been awaiting trial in Japan. He's been under house arrest, excuse me, for a variety of allegations, including skimming money from the company Till to the tune of $85 million, underreporting his income to the tune of $85 million, and also using company resources for personal use. So he's been awaiting trial in Japan. It's gone on almost 2 years. Now, Japan, the backstory is Japan is famously notorious for the length at which they wait for trial. In other words, in the United States, what we're used to is fairly speedy trials, right? I mean, the idea is, you know, that you get to trial fairly quickly. In Japan, it's not uncommon to go a year or two before you even get a preliminary hearing. The idea is that they want to sweat you out in Japan. They really want to use that time to get you to admit to some of your crimes. So that's the backstory. Carlos Ghosn has now alleged for 2 years that he's the victim of an unfair Japanese legal system and he's not getting a fair shake. Well, guess what? He escaped. You know, he used that as justification to get on a private jet in Tokyo. Remember, he was on house arrest. Excuse me. And he flew to Turkey and then flew to Beirut, where he is currently now living as of the last couple days. You look at the story and you shake your head. How can this happen? He was under 24-hour surveillance in Japan. This was, you know, arguably the biggest criminal prosecution in Japanese history, or at least recent history. How could this guy just leave his house and get on a plane? Well, he did so allegedly by hiding in a musical instrument at Christmas. The building
Wait,
that
a
he was
musical instrument,
yeah, like a double a stand-up bass. Apparently,
really?
He hid inside of it and was and left with the band. Again, got on. He has.
You mean the case of the musical instrument?
I think the actual bass is what I understand.
What?
Yeah, it was like a trick bass. If you read the Wall Street Journal, has a great blow by blow, and they allege that this scheme had been developed over a long period of time with the help of many authorities in Japan and in Lebanon. So he escaped, is now back on Lebanese soil. Guess what? There is no extradition treaty between Japan and Lebanon. So right now, there's not a whole lot that Japan can do to bring him back to the legal system in Japan to face justice. Again, he's been very vocal in saying that he hasn't received a fair shake in Japan. Well, guess what? What defendant ever thinks they receive a fair shake? You know, you could walk down to 25th in California here and talk to thousands of, you know, prisoners who say they're not getting a fair trial. They don't have the luxury of leaving jail and going to another country. So, really fascinating story.
Well, he has a lot of money, and it's white collar crime.
Yeah, it's a terrible example of someone using their resources to evade justice.
Absolutely.
And speaking of which, it leads to our next story, right?
Yes.
The affluenza teen. We've covered the story extensively.
This is the silver spoon story.
Man, exactly. Not the golden spoon.
And you don't mean influenza, you mean affluenza.
Yeah, absolutely. Affluenza meaning, you know, a alleged disease involving affluent or rich people who, because they were raised with a golden spoon in their mouth, they don't know the difference
silver
between...
Silver spoon.
Silver spoon. They don't know the difference between right and wrong. That's what this junk science theory, you know, supports. Now, this was raised at his trial back in a few years ago in Texas.
We're joking about it, but this is a really tragic case.
Of course. So,
describe
Ethan
it for
Crouch,
us.
Ethan Crouch is a Texas man, excuse me, who was drunk driving in Texas and killed four people. Was tried, actually didn't go to trial because he pled guilty. And he brought forth evidence from a psychiatrist that he was not responsible for his actions. He couldn't tell the difference between right and wrong because he was a victim of affluenza, meaning his upbringing, his rich upbringing, made him, prevented him from learning the difference between right and wrong. So instead of going to jail for killing four people, guess how long he served?
He killed four people.
Killed four people. He served no jail time. He pled out to probation. He had 10 years of probation. And then soon after he did that, he fled to Mexico with his mother. They were caught in Puerto Vallarta, brought back to the United States. And now, so that's the backstory. Now, this week, he was picked up again for violating parole, allegedly caught with THC in his system. So the story continues. This is another example of a privileged, you know, person.
It's a
just
terrible story.
It absolutely is.
I mean, he I couldn't imagine. I mean, he killed four people, then he gets off on probation,
runs away to Mexico.
Then why would
dyes
he run
his
away?
Hair.
He got a second chance at life,
right?
Undeservedly so.
Was also famously seen on a video shortly thereafter playing beer pong with a bunch of teenagers. Again, part of his the terms of his probation are that he can't use any drugs or alcohol, obviously. And now, again, this week, he was picked up and tested positive for THC.
So definitely didn't try to reform or do any soul searching or any type of therapy or giving back
Learned
to the
nothing.
Community.
Learned
Not
nothing.
Even community service was required.
Learned nothing. And in fact, the federal marshal, I was watching a video of him earlier, he said, you know, this is an example of someone who just cannot reform. There's a certain class of people who, you know, it just, it doesn't, they can't be reformed. And this is, I
and
think,
by
an
class,
example
you don't
that.
Mean wealth. You mean a type of
people.
Person.
A type of
yes,
person
absolutely.
Who just doesn't get rehab.
I just wanted to clarify.
Absolutely.
In case. Okay. Well, that, you know what? That's a horrible story.
It really is.
And his mother and his dad should feel awful, too.
Yeah, remember, his mother is the one who took him to Puerto Vallarta shortly after he pled guilty and was picked up and brought back to the United States by the feds.
Thinking about those families affected by those four deaths, unbelievable.
Yeah.
The fact that they have to live with that.
Terrible.
For the rest of their lives, the repercussions of that grief and loss. Oh, awful story. Okay, so let's talk about something a little bit lighter and funnier. I want to know about this cheese story.
Yeah, you know, lawsuits involving cheese. You don't see them too often, but Marc Veyrat, I think is the pronunciation. I actually speak French, so maybe it's Veyrat. He is a famous chef. He is of the La Maison des Bois restaurant, mm-hmm. and he had three stars.
I like your French accent.
Oui, I'm a Canadian, so I've got some background there. But he got the coveted three stars, which is the highest level of achievement you can
on the Michelin guide.
Absolutely. And they stripped him. Michelin stripped him of one of these stars. Why is that? Because he was using the wrong cheese in his French souffle. Rather than using French cheeses like Beaufort, he allegedly, according to Michelin, used English cheddar cheese, which I can only imagine is an international incident, using English cheddar cheese in a French souffle. Well, they took away one of his stars, and he, in turn, has filed a lawsuit trying to get the star back, saying that he did not use the wrong cheese, that the reviewers don't know what they're talking about. He also said, of course, that he doesn't really need the stars anyway, and his business is up 7%. So if I'm in the jury, and I'm looking at the damages component of his case, I would think, well, there really are no damages because your business is up and you just admitted that. So maybe not great, you know, PR work by him. But yeah, interesting lawsuit involving this allegedly English cheese.
Wow. They said my souffle was full of cheddar, said the chef in November when he took the case to court. Is what shows a lack of incompetence. So.
Yeah, but these stars are a big deal.
They are a really big deal.
There's a book from a few years ago that I read about a star who actually committed suicide after losing his stars. So in the chef world, it's obviously
it can
a huge
make
deal.
Or break you.
Absolutely.
And it does lead to people traveling just to come and visit and try your restaurant.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, okay, so what else is going on? You're going to be taping?
Taping on Tuesday. We've got some great guests. We actually got a family law attorney coming in to talk about how authentic the portrayal of divorce law is in Marriage Story, the Netflix movie that's getting a lot of Oscar
buzz.
That
is with Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver.
Yes, who is in Star Wars right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. He's Darth Vader, right?
Yes.
But my, you know, as
Kylo
a lawyer,
Ren.
My favorite.
Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren. Oh, Kylo Ren. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, thank you,
That's true. Yeah, he's not Darth Vader.
Yes. But
probably, you'll probably get a million tweets about this idiot.
No, no, no. He's the grandson.
He's related somehow.
No, wait. He's the... Never mind.
Kylo
I just
Ren.
Saw it, too.
But as an attorney, my favorite part of Marriage Story was the attorneys in it. So Alan Alda plays one of Adam Driver's attorneys. And then he... I don't want to give anything away, but he also retains Ray Liotta.
Okay.
Who I love. And then on her side, Scarlett Johansson is represented by Laura Dern. And
love Laura Dern as well. Fabulous actress.
Amazing. The legal scenes of the movie are unbelievable.
So you recommend it. You're going to break that down.
It's great. We're going to break it. How authentic it is.
Any quick advice in terms of what people should be doing to wrap things up? Think legally. Any legal to-dos at the beginning of the year?
Make sure you've got great lawyers on your cell phone, on speed dial. That's all you need.
Okay. So where can people find you?
So we're on WGN, of course. You can look us up on the WGN.com website. We're on Legal Faceoff. We're on Instagram, Facebook, all those places. And you can listen to our show on through the WGN website or iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Wonderful. It's a WGN Plus podcast, Legal Faceoff. Thanks so much to attorney Rich Lenkoff. And Happy New Year to you.
Thanks so
for
much.
Being
Happy
in
New
studio.
Year to you. Thank you. I appreciate
it. All right.
It.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. This is the Anna DeVellante Show. This is G filling in for Anna today. On Fridays, Anna always talks about relationships and usually has a relationship expert in. Am I right, Jasmine?
You are right.
Okay, so today is Friday and we are going to have one of Chicago's favorite relationship experts. Her name is so appropriately Love. Love McPherson. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here, G.
Happy New Year. Okay, so I know you have a wealth of information for us. By the way, Love is your real given
it
first
really
name.
It really is my real name. It's on my birth certificate, and it's a sappy story between my mom and dad. They are both, you know, deceased right now, but I'm telling you, they told me all the time about how good my dad was to her, and she named me Love because of her love for him, and I was the sixth of eight children. So if
and
you
they
can,
still have
I,
love.
I, see, you know, they were married 60 years, so you know that was some real love, right? I was his love child.
Oh, well, God bless their souls. They did a good job. Okay, so this is perfect for you because now you are a relationship expert. Your first name is Love. We're in 2020 now, 3 days in. You say that you are going to give us some tips on how to give your relationship a fresh start in 2020.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that my husband and I practice, and we've been married for 36 years, one of the things we practice is that we do a assessment of our relationships. I think everybody needs to. Because, you know, with relationships, everybody always hears relationships are work, but you actually have to treat them like work. You have to treat them like corporations. And every corporation, you have to do an assessment of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. That's a SWOT assessment. And so with your own relationship, you want to do the same thing.
So this is fascinating to me because today on the Wintrust Business Lunch, I was talking with a CEO of a recruiting company, and he was saying at your job, you should ask your boss for a review. And you are essentially saying the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
In your romantic relationship, you should ask your partner for a review.
Absolutely. We have not only that, but my husband and I, we do an annual relationship retreat where we go and make sure that we are in line with our vision of our marriage. If you don't understand that marriage has a purpose, then you won't know if you've reached the goal. But we also do the SWOT analysis. So it's like when we do that, we look at the strengths of our relationship. What are we really, really strong in? You may be strong in the teamwork or the friendship or bouncing back after a fight or something like that.
And you're saying SWOT as in S-W-O-T. O-T. Okay.
Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats.
Okay.
Yes. And so that's part of like a strategic planning for corporations and organizations when you're doing quality improvement. And so the strengths you look at, but then you also look at the weaknesses of your relationships. What are we vulnerable in as far as weaknesses? Are you not prioritizing? Are your finances off? Is the sex life off? You know, frequency or quality? Are we talking about compassion, kindness? What is off in what needs to be improved? What are our weakest areas that we need to target? The other thing is opportunities. What opportunities of growth could we have? Now, when we talk about opportunities for growth, you know, a lot of times people think that relationships are all about whether you love me or not. But relationships are a lot of times based on skill level. If you don't have communication skills or conflict resolution skills or listening skills, you will fail at a relationship. So what are some opportunities to grow your relationship skills, how you relate to one another? That means that you would have to study each other, understand our personalities, understand our triggers, wants, and traumas.
And did you go over the T yet?
I have not.
Okay, I think we have time for you to go over the T.
Okay, the threats would be the boundaries, so things that we see that are threatening our relationship. Maybe like you cross boundaries on social media. You spend too much money. You have anger issues. Your health is a threat to our long-term dreams, to our vision, to the things that we want to accomplish.
Oh my goodness. So this actually requires some real time.
It does.
And both partners have to be devoted to making and carving out that time in a very hectic and busy world.
Absolutely. You have to. You have to put in time for anything you're doing. You're doing the business thing, right? You know that you cannot run a business if you don't put in the time to make it successful.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what if your partner is being a little resistant or you're having trouble finding the time to actually do this SWOT?
You know, that's one of the threats, right? Is that you will not follow the time. So we can actually even look at the fact that you don't seem as dedicated to making it better. You are willing to allow it to drift, because one of the things you have to do is be intentional. You cannot have a drifting relationship. A drift is subjected to all the winds and whatever comes your way. You want to make sure that you're very, very intentional about whatever you have found in your SWOT analysis of your relationship. You need to stop now then and go to counseling. Maybe that's one of the areas where when you start improving and you see some of those weaknesses, the next thing is you have to be intentional while improving and then stay dedicated. Meaning this, maybe we need counseling just first of all to identify, to work on those threats of your lack of dedication to improvement.
So you are recommending counseling for couples?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There's no stigma. People shouldn't be ashamed or feel as though it's suggesting that something is very wrong in their relationship to go to counseling.
I think it's necessary, because just like a car, I don't care what model car you buy, no matter how much the car costs, it will always need maintenance. And so in your relationships, make sure that you do maintenance for your relationship. It doesn't make it devalued. It doesn't mean that you have something wrong with you, but sometimes you will find that there are some things that you have. You can, a lot of times you didn't live on this earth long enough to not end up having some fears and traumas associated with this stuff.
Well, I think it's really good to carve out time in a relationship to reassess goals, because goals have to be intentional and you have to make sure that you're on the same page.
Absolutely. You have to, you know, and this is the thing. When you set goals, they should stem from your vision of your relationship, because the vision creates the purpose and the purpose creates the goals. So when you're talking about a vision, when you are on two different visions for your marriage, what do you have? Division. So that's when conflict arises.
Gee, I'm okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes,
we're going to go to the White House, where President Trump is beginning to address this attack against the Iranian general yesterday.
The United States military successfully executed a flawless precision strike that killed the number one terrorist anywhere in the world, Qasem Soleimani. Soleimani was plotting imminent and sinister attacks on American diplomats and military personnel, but we caught him in the act and terminated him. Under my leadership, America's policy is unambiguous to terrorists who harm or intend to harm any American.
We will find you. We will eliminate you. We will always protect our diplomats, service members, all Americans, and our allies. For years, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and its ruthless Quds Force under Soleimani's leadership has targeted, injured, and murdered hundreds of American civilians and servicemen. The recent attacks on U.S. targets in Iraq, including rocket strikes that killed an American and injured four American servicemen very badly, as well as a violent assault on our embassy in Baghdad, were carried out at the direction of Soleimani. Soleimani made the death of innocent people his sick passion, contributing to terrorist plots as far away as New Delhi and London. Today we remember and honor the victims of Soleimani's many atrocities, and we take comfort in knowing that his reign of terror is over. Soleimani has been perpetrating acts of terror to destabilize the Middle East for the last 20 years. What the United States did yesterday should have been done long ago. A lot of lives would have been saved. Just recently, Soleimani led the brutal repression of protesters in Iran, where more than 1,000 innocent civilians were tortured and killed by their own government. We took action last night to stop a war. We did not take action to start a war. I have deep respect for the Iranian people. They are a remarkable people with an incredible heritage and unlimited potential. We do not seek regime change. However, the Iranian regime's aggression in the region, including the use of proxy fighters to destabilize its neighbors, must end, and it must end now. The future belongs to the people of Iran, those who seek peaceful coexistence and cooperation, not the terrorist warlords who plunder their nation to finance bloodshed abroad. The United States has the best military by far anywhere in the world. We have the best intelligence in the world. If Americans anywhere are threatened, we have all of those targets already fully identified, and I am ready and prepared to take whatever action is necessary. And that in particular refers to Iran. Under my leadership, we have destroyed the ISIS territorial caliphate. And recently, American Special Operations Forces killed the terrorist leader known as al-Baghdadi. The world is a safer place without these monsters. America will always pursue the interests of good people, great souls, while seeking peace, harmony, and friendship with all of the nations of the world. Thank you. God bless you. God bless our great military, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. President, you say you do this.
The president speaking in Palm Beach, Florida. There were indications he might take questions. I was incorrect when I said earlier at the White House. He's still in Florida for the holidays. And there you can see leaving without answering any questions from reporters, but talking about the attack that led to the death of Soleimani, the general. He said, we did not undertake this attack to start a war. We did so to end the war. A lot of conversation about this coming up throughout the day on WGN Radio. All right, now back to G.
Thank you so much, Steve Bertrand. Okay, so let's continue our conversation. Jasmine, do we have to take a break? Okay, actually, we'll take a break and then we'll continue our conversation with relationship expert Love McPherson. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. We are back on the Anna DeVellante Show. Anna always has a relationship expert on Fridays. Here with Love McPherson. She's one of Chicago's favorite relationship experts. You just talked with us about how to reassess and check in your romantic relationship with your partner, using SWOT, which stood for, once again,
strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. That's the SWOT analysis.
Wonderful. So let's move on and talk a little bit about toxic relationships. It seems that we all know someone who has been involved or have ourselves been involved in a toxic relationship. How do you get yourself out of one? How do you recognize that you're in one? How do you reach a loved one that might be in one and doesn't know it?
You know, and that is so very common, because a lot of times what happens is the toxicity is tolerated at the levels of your trauma and lack of healing. And so what ends up happening is when you learn to tolerate dysfunction and people abusing you, you will almost always be able to trace that back into negative messages of your past. One of the things that analogy that I like to use when it's talking about toxic relationships, is that the toxic relationships, because when you're talking about dating, those are like shopping. Like if you're going clothes shopping or something like that, and you'll see a lot of similarities. For instance, it's very toxic when you lie to yourself about what this relationship is. We do that when we're shopping. We will see a dress or an outfit doesn't fit, and we'll say, oh, you know what? I'll lose weight and get in it. I'm
going
to do it.
That's not a lie. I'm really going to lose that 10 pounds to get in that dress because it's on sale.
Yes.
And it's such a good deal. I can't pass it up.
And this is what we'll do. That guy will say, I'm not interested in a committed relationship. You know what fits you is I want a committed long-term relationship. We will enter into that relationship anyway, thinking we're going to change it down the road, just like that dress.
What is the old saying? You can't change anyone.
You can't change. You will spend your whole entire life trying to change yourself. So just focus on you.
Very wise words.
Let me give you another one. Another one is when we are hiding purchases, because we made some kind of agreement with someone that we would not go back to the malls or back to the stores and spend anymore. And so when we are dating, we do the same thing. We're off the market. We're not here. We're not on display for shopping. You won't look for somebody else. I won't look for somebody else. But then betrayal, cheating, crossing boundaries is I'm going to go to that store. I'm going to go back, look at some more merchandise and take it home. But I'm going to hide it. I'm going to pretend I didn't. That's betrayal. That's lack of integrity. That is toxic. And if you are still shopping, but you have somebody under the impression that you're not, then you are wrong.
I am enjoying this, love, because you're giving relationship analogies based on toxic financial habits that are also not good for 2020. So
absolutely.
You're speaking to both finances and to matters of the heart as well. So do you have another?
Yes. And this one is going to go a little bit deeper, because this is going to be even more a little bit criminal, which is switching tags. And people do it in stores. They switch tags before they get up to the register because they want to pay the cheaper price for the product. And this is what happens in a relationship. People will switch your tag, your self-worth. They will beat you down. They will criticize you constantly. They will always make you think you are less than what you are really worth because they don't want to pay the price for you. And when people don't want to pay the price for you and they belittle you and tell you that you are not worth the price so that you will be able to just give it away for less than what you're worth, then that's a toxic relationship. You must not allow abuser's worst nightmare. First of all, abuser's worst nightmare is if you ever discover who you really are. So what you have to do is you cannot allow your support systems to be to get away. They want to separate you from people who will tell you the truth about how great you are and how fantastic you are. Make sure that you don't allow yourself to be separated from your support systems and those people who can tell you the truth about your greatness.
Okay, so you are definitely worth the full price. You're not on a sale rack. You're not on a clearance rack.
You are not on a clearance rack. And so when somebody pays, comes, you know, when I go to a thrift store, guess what happens? I already know I'm looking for a deal. I'm looking for somebody who actually sent a nice designer outfit and didn't even realize, and the people who were marking it didn't even know what it's worth. That's what I'm looking for. Somebody who doesn't know their worth. There are perpetrators out there who are looking for people who don't know their worth.
Well, how do you reach out to a loved one who may be involved in a toxic relationship? You see it clearly as a toxic relationship, but they don't see it as one. You've maybe even talked to them about it, and they don't feel as though there's anything wrong.
Here's the thing. when you are dealing with someone who is not hearing you, when you're trying to tell them about their self-worth, it is usually so much deeper than just the message. These are messages that have been told to them for years that they have internalized.
So how do you penetrate that? There's so much history.
The only cure for that is self-love. But that in order to love yourself, you have to learn yourself. You have to go back and tell yourself the truth. Because if the lie says that you're not worthy of love because I'm your daddy and I wouldn't even show up for you, or I'm your mother and I was depressed and I wouldn't even come out of my room for you, and those are the messages that you have internalized, it takes more than one person one day, because we hear and we are what we believe about ourselves.
Well, you offer weekly group sessions where people can sign up to take classes and work on self-love, work on communication, work on their relationships. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Absolutely. It's called The Workplace, and it's a group session that happens weekly. And what we do is I meet with the committee, and you know, like I said, relationships take work. This is the workplace. So you come to do work on yourself. The first phase of it is the self-love phase, where you begin to start loving you. Because if I can't love me, I can't love you effectively. So that's the core. The core of you has to be strong. Your emotional core of who you are has to be strong. And that starts on Tuesday, January 7th. That's going to be the first phase of that class. You can sign up at www.dothework.com. Today, I will be there online, live with you to teach you and answer questions. It's a great group session.
Well, fantastic. And you have a general website, lovemcpherson.com, lovemcpherson.com, where you offer
private coaching, yes.
Private individual couples, yes. Coaching. Thank you so much
for
being.
And singles coaching.
Oh, yes. Singles coaching too. That's
absolutely
very important to love yourself. Begin to love yourself in 2020. We appreciate you being here with us so much.
It's been such a pleasure.
One of Chicago's favorite relationship experts, Love McPherson. Thank you, Love, and Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Fantastic. Okay, so we've got some movie reviews coming up for movies that you've got to see this weekend. And we're going to be talking about 2020 beer trends as well. But let's go over to the WGN newsroom right now, though. This is the Anna DeVellantes Show. This is G filling in for Anna. She will be back next week on Monday. Right now, I have Patrick McDonald for Box Movies, and I hear you are a fantastic movie guy.
Thank you. Yes, I am.
Jasmine is singing your praises. So you're going to have some recommendations for us for this weekend.
Well, just the openings this weekend. So I do have a couple films right now. And the main one is The Grudge. This is a horror film. Now, this has been done twice in Japan, once here in America, and they're rebooting the American version.
It's that good.
I guess.
The screenplay is so fabulous.
I guess the story is just so overwhelming. That
producers can continue to raise money to film this once again.
Yep. Because you can make them on the cheap, and you can make a lot of money if you just get a nice wide release. So one of the things that I think is indicative of a film is when you look at the cast, and you see people in the cast that you really like, like Andrea Riseborough, Damien Bichir, John Cho, and Jackie Weaver. Now, Bichir and Weaver are both Oscar nominees. So you see good people in the cast, and you say, you know, that's a good indicator that a movie is good. Now, this is very, very creepy, but it's one of those horror films that, you know, wants its cake and eat it too. You know, it's one of those situations where, yes, there's some good scares in it, but to what end? We need a cohesiveness here. But still, I think if you like horror films, 3.5 out of 5 for The Grudge.
3.5 out of 5.
Yes.
I am not a fan of horror.
You know, that's not my genre of expertise, but being a movie guy, I've seen my share of them.
Well, you have to do it. It's your job.
Exactly.
So we appreciate that you
yes.
do it. I tend to be someone, after I've seen a scary movie, to not be able to sleep at night.
All right.
My imagination gets away from me.
Which scary movies have you seen that really affected you?
Recently, I've just seen the trailers on commercials, and it's been enough. The reboot of It, all of the really scary movies where there's zombies crawling upside down on ceilings is enough. Just the trailer alone. The movie Us. Just the trailer of the movie. Yeah. When it starts to play on television, on HBO, I have to turn it immediately because I'm already creeped out.
Well, a lot of the things with horror films now is since you have the digital imagery and special effects, you can go farther and farther. But that doesn't necessarily make a better film, because the second It, for example, the first It is when these people were kids. The second It is when they were adults. Now, when they were adults, they just poured on the special effects. Not as good a movie, but...
What else do you have?
I have a dance documentary. Is this more of your...
Yes! But I am a terrible dancer. I have no rhythm. I can't dance at all, but...
We're learning a lot about you.
I know, but I love watching dancers. I am fascinated by dancers.
Well, this is a perfect movie to see. It's called Cunningham. It's a documentary. It's filmed in 3D. And by first-time director Ala Kovgan. And it's about dance artist Merce Cunningham. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
I hadn't heard of him either. But he was one of those guys that emerged after World War II. This was an interesting fact about the film that I didn't realize. After World War II, with a lot of Europe kind of in tatters, New York City became the center of the avant-garde. You know, we're talking 46, 47, 48. And that's where Merce Cunningham came into play.
And, I just Googled him.
Yeah, there you go. He reigned as an innovator from the 1950s through 2009, the year of his death at age 90. He was known as a collaborator with some of the most cutting-edge artists of the late 20th century, including Robert Rauschenberg, Andy Warhol, Brian Eno, Radiohead, and his partner, John Cage, who is one of the great avant-garde composers. He was his partner until his death. So both the archive footage and the modern interpretations of his pieces look amazing in 3D. And that's what the director told me works best for dance choreography.
I was thinking about the range of artists that he worked with.
Exactly.
But then if you think about how long he was alive.
Right.
Just everything that the changes in art and...
You think about the scene in NYC. I mean, you know, the possibilities in the 40s, 50s, 60s were expansive. And even when it took a downturn in the 70s, you know, Basquiat emerged and Keith Haring.
I'm excited to see this one.
It's good.
I love documentaries and I love history. And this is going to be fantastic. I love dancers. I'm just in awe of...
She recreates some of his dances in 3D and it's just spectacular. I can't recommend it more. 4 out of 5 for Cunningham.
4 out of 5. Yeah. I'm wondering, is there anything that has a 5 out of 5 for this weekend?
Well, you know, there's a couple of films in the theaters right now, which I would give 5 out of 5. 1917. Have you heard about this one, the World War I film?
I have heard about it.
Yes. Sam Mendes, who did American Beauty, has two World War I soldiers crossing the lines to warn their comrades that the Germans have set a trap for them. It's all done supposedly in one shot. He manipulates, I think.
The editing,
yes.
So it looks continuous.
Looks continuous.
Well, and you saw it and you gave it 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. It's a anti-war, it's a war film that is an exemplary anti-war statement because of its scope. You know, there's waste, there's frustration, there's great cameos.
As a movie reviewer,
yes.
Were you watching closely to see if you could catch the seams of the editing?
Well, I mean, I think once you start doing that, you take yourself out of the whole experience. Now, there are films that, you know, I'll be watching and suddenly they do something and boom, I'm out of it. And that's it. You know, once you step out for a second, very hard to get back in. I was just watching it for the experience, essentially. But I have to applaud Mendes for giving it an experimental twist.
A little bit of avant-garde.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
There's a theme.
And Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. Yeah.
We've been hearing so much about Uncut Gems.
Amazing.
I saw the trailer. I was going to go see the movie over the weekend, and I wasn't able to find time to do so.
Yeah.
But it is deserving of all the...
Absolutely. And Sandler is deserving of all the praise he has been getting, too. I do believe he's going to be a top runner in the best actor category.
And I know everyone was talking about Adam Sandler, and this is a very different type of Adam Sandler you're going to see in the movie. And then, of course, everyone would say, well, what about Punch Drunk Love? But this is very different than the character in Punch Drunk Love as well.
Absolutely. I think in Punch Drunk Love, they were just trying to kind of go to the serious side of his angry character. This is not, this is a full character. This is a gem dealer in New York City who's a gambling addict and has one big score to do, and he can get everything straight. So it's like a bunch of onrushing cars that are his problems all of a sudden heading toward a pileup.
The stress and anxiety that I felt from just watching the trailer and the fact that he owed so many people so much money.
Unbelievable.
And it seemed as though the people that he owed were coming at him to do bodily harm to him.
Yes. Pretty much. That's the summation.
My palms were sweating.
Yeah. And you, if you like sweaty palms, you're going to do that throughout the entire picture. And it has Kevin Garnett in it, the old basketball player who retired in 2016. He plays himself as one of the people who want this gem that that Mr. Sandler's character possesses.
I did see him in the trailer as well.
Yes, yes.
Anything else you wanted to mention that we should check out?
Well, we were talking a bit, Jazzy and I, about Star Wars. And
I did go see Star Wars.
All right. Well, it's been controversial. This opened with the least amount of box office, and this is how they score films now. But it was an opposite thing. The fans like this movie better than the critics, and the previous movie, Last Jedi, the critics liked it better than the fans. So we have this mix of emotions going on, and then I did some digging and found out the editor of Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker told of a very pressure-filled situation with director J.J. Abrams to finish this film. Not to mention the committee that gets together at Disney and said, you have to have these many lightsaber battles, you have to have these many space battles.
Think about the stockholders. Yeah.
So, what started as a mythology with George Lucas has become something that is made by committee.
Big business.
And unfortunately, you're going to get a split reaction. Now, I like the film.
I was going to ask you, Patrick.
What
about the Carrie Fisher scenes?
Well, we're kind of like keyed into that now. They're not distracting, and I think they give her a pretty good send off, if you will. I get a little weirded out by when they make people into animatrons, but it's so small that you can't help it. It's just I guess I was hooked into the emotion. But I can see where people wouldn't like it because there are some just parts that were like, there's just too much going on, folks.
I need less with the rebellion, the general rebellion group, and more with Kylo Ren. And
aren't you like, I'm almost ready to go to the dark side. I'm so tired of the heroes in this thing. No, I'm just kidding.
You could never, because you're one of our heroes. Thank you so much, Patrick. Where can we find your reviews?
HollywoodChicago.com. I got my top 10 up there right now. So you want to see that. And I have an interview with the director of Cunningham. So you're going to want to go there. HollywoodChicago.com. I don't know what
most
you said.
Most excellent, sir. Yeah. Do you enjoy beer? Well, I have a beer expert here with us, Jesse Valencia, to talk about beer trends for 2020. How are you, Jesse?
Good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. So you have a new project underway, I'm hearing.
Yeah. We've been slowly launching. It's going to be called Feast City. We're on Instagram as feast.city. I started Mambecue a few years ago, and it was something that I love, and it's still going. It was very niche, and I wanted something that was a little bit more all-encompassing. But I wanted to stay with the tenets of drink, food, and like the whole culture around both of those things.
Well, let's explain what Mambecue is, just in case the listener hasn't heard of Mambecue before.
Yeah, so Mambecue is this organization that was really like powered and fueled by meat, beer, rock and roll. And by rock and roll, I mean like the lifestyle, not necessarily just the music, but good food, good beer, and mostly outdoor food, and the culture around that. And I wanted to do something that was more indoors because there were so many people that, being in Chicago, not everybody has access to like a big outdoor grill. So it was like, how do I do something that's like not the opposite, but it's a little bit more, it gives you more options.
And your new site is different in what way?
It's going to be more, it focuses on like cooking with friends. It's something that I enjoy doing and a lot of my friends enjoy doing. And it was kind of this idea where like, what if we did this and like kind of shared our recipes, you know, shared our adventures through this new Feast City site.
So a little bit more inclusive, especially, was Manbecue just for men?
You know, it originally started and it was mostly guys, but we've, little known secret, one of the founders is Aubrey Boonser. She's a photographer. She's been with us from the beginning, but, you know, people read Manbecue and they're like, oh, it must be a guys only thing, but it really wasn't. We were a pretty inclusive club from the beginning.
So give me an example of why I would want to go and visit your new site.
Well, first of all, like the simple fact is we'll have like really good recipes, you know, stuff that we've been trying out. Then my whole thing is creating engaging content, educational content, and, you know, entertaining content. At the end of the day, if you're going to watch something, you want to be entertained. You don't want to just, there's so much clutter out there. I don't want to just do something that's already been done 10 times over.
And I mentioned you as a beer expert, but you're also a food expert. You've been cooking for a long time. And you've been perfecting recipes, and you also have a cookbook as well.
Yeah, two cookbooks. The first one is called Manbecue, and the second one is Eat Street.
What are we looking forward to in 2020 in terms of what we're going to be drinking?
You know, to be completely honest, I just had a meeting at Moore Brewing. We're doing an event with them in March, and they do a lot of these big stouts with a lot of flavors, and they do these IPAs that are really creamy and, you know, it's like they call them milkshake IPAs. So it's essentially you're drinking this IPA that tastes like a milkshake you get at a fountain shop, you know. But on top of that, I'm really excited to see a lot of these craft seltzers coming out. You know, last year was the year of the White Claw. It kind of overtook craft beers. And this year, I think it's going to change a little bit. You're going to see these local breweries, these smaller breweries, getting into that game and adding more of a, you know, localized touch to the hard seltzer category.
Let's go back to these milkshake IPAs. If you're not a beer fan, can you explain the difference between an IPA and another beer? And they really do taste a bit milkshakey. So why
they really do?
Why has this become a trend?
You know, I think people are always craving something different. You know, IPAs are good beers that are driven by hops. You get a lot of bitterness. Some of them are more balanced than others. With these milkshake IPAs, you're getting a beer that not only is driven by hops, now you're adding these different adjuncts. So one of the beers I had at Moore today, it had cinnamon, cranberry, and it really tasted like a milkshake. Like it was thick, and in the glass, if you wouldn't have told me it was beer, I would have thought it was somebody's like breakfast smoothie.
Explain what an adjunct is. You're doing the beer nerd talk.
Sorry. So adjuncts are just added, like, additions to the beer. You know, beer is hops, water, malt, and yeast. So an adjunct is anything on top of that, in addition to that. So in this case, when we're talking about milkshakes, lactose sugar, which is a non-fermenting sugar, so it doesn't, it'll give you a sweetness, but it's not going to ferment, which we can get into that later. But so you've got sugar that adds body to it, and then you add these like different fruits also that serve as adjuncts and give it more of that milkshakey taste.
Okay, Jesse, we just went down the rabbit hole of beer, and I need to climb back out. Could you give us some recommendations of some of your favorite beers and a couple of breweries that you love to go to for that particular beer?
Definitely. Moore Brewing, I think, right now is kind of leading the charge when it comes to these big pastry stouts.
Where is that?
Those guys are out in Villa Park.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And how long have they been around?
They've been around for a few years now. I think they're going on like 3-4 years.
And you love to have what there?
Any one of their stouts, you're going to hit a home run with. They're delicious.
And stouts are the darker,
the big,
creamier,
robust, dark beers. Yeah. So these nice, big, malty beers that, the malts get roasted, so they're almost, they have these like nice chocolatey coffee notes to them. They're beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Another
one. In Chicago, I love Cruz Blanca is one of my absolute favorite breweries. Jacob Zambrano, the brewer there, I think he's doing the best beers in Chicago right now, and it's really under the radar. But he
so
really
you mean Cruz Blanca that's related to Rick Bayless.
Yeah, Rick Bayless's restaurant is attached to it, and he actually created the food program for Cruz Blanca.
And you love so what got, about their beers?
Just how creative they are, the ingredients that they use, and Jacob, the way he approaches his beers is very methodical. So everything makes sense. He doesn't just kind of throw things in and hopes he gets something good. Like he kind of knows going into what he's doing, how things are going to turn out. He's a scientist when it comes to beer, so it's really impressive to taste his beers.
And we always like to hear about recommendations and threes, so you have to give us a third one.
Yeah, so can I give two third ones?
Absolutely. You can give as many as you like.
I'm a huge fan of Great Central. They do great German beers, very clean lagers. And on that same note, Dovetail up on the north side, I want to give love to all the neighborhoods in Chicago. Dovetail is by the Ravenswood Corridor, and they also do amazing German beers.
What about, can you name off some in the suburbs for listeners in the suburbs?
Suburbs, Microphone is really good. They're out in Oak Grove Village. Solemn Oath is there, I want to say right outside of Naperville. Those guys have been doing it for almost 10 years, I want to say, and they always have a solid beer program.
So in the entire program, it's worth sampling off of. There's not one particular beer to get off as get from the menu.
Yeah, those guys, they did a couple years ago, they put out this really beautiful coconut stout. It was an imperial stout, which means it's a bigger stout than your regular stouts. Mm-hmm. And this was a barrel aged stout, so they took that beer, aged in bourbon barrels, and added coconut. And it was one of my favorite beers of 2 years ago, and I'm pretty sure it's a rotating beer as well.
Solemn Oath Brewery is on 1661 Quincy Avenue in Naperville. So
yeah, and I know they're going to be opening a tap room in Logan Square too.
Oh, so they're moving to the city as well. They'll have an outlet there as well. What about in terms of food? What are you seeing for food and beer pairings that might be really trendy for 2020?
You know what I'm seeing a lot of, and I feel like I'm jumping into the fray too, but I'm seeing, as far as cooking trends, a lot of these like feasts that are happening, a lot of friends cooking together. You know, restaurants, they're all out there, and people are spending less money eating out and like staying in and cooking for not only themselves but friends. And that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years, and that's what inspired me. But I'm seeing that as trends, like as an emerging trend. More people staying home and cooking.
Well, that makes sense, especially since you just launched Feast City. Tell people where they can find Feast City one more time.
Yeah, we're on Instagram, feast.city, at feast.city. And they can find Mambecue, at Mambecue on Instagram, and Mambecue.com on the web.
And a teaser of one recipe. What's your favorite recipe that's on the site right now?
So last night we cooked some... I really love Korean food, and I finally perfected my Korean kimchi pancake recipe. So that's going to be coming up next couple days, hopefully.
Korean kimchi pancake, spicy and savory. Thank you so much, Jesse Valencia. Really appreciate it. Check out his new at feast.city on Instagram for recipes and also Mambecue as well. Thanks so much, Jesse. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.